welcome to an extra special episode of No Player Connected. As of recording this portion of the podcast, it is almost 8 p.m. Thursday, April 11th. My guest is myself, calling backwards into time, or I'm yelling forward. I don't know how to view this. This is maybe one of my dumbest ideas yet, but we're going to roll with it. I'm going to ask myself a series of questions about the Outlaws of Thunder Junction pre-release, and then the me from the future who attended the midnight pre-release like a chump gets to answer them, possibly sleep deprived. Me in the future, how are you feeling? Are we hydrated? Did we sleep? Are we coming right off of the pre-release? Hey there, me from the past. No, as a matter of fact, I did not immediately come home and start recording. No, the pre-release wrapped up at around 1:30, 2 a.m.-ish. And so there was not a snowball's chance in hell that I was going to put myself and Emma through a, 3 a.m. podcast recording session. So, no, I'm actually recording this Sunday. So I gave myself all Saturday to recuperate, lick my wounds, patch myself up. But now I am ready to talk about the pre-release. So for the uninitiated, can you tell me what a pre-release is? Can you give the folks at home a rundown of what Outlaws of Thunder Junction is all about? Yeah, I can answer that first one pretty easily. I mean, pre-releases have been going on for a extremely long period of time. This is basically a event that game stores across the world put on where you get to play with the new cards a week early in a format that you call sealed. Basically, you get a special pack of Magic cards, and inside you have one foil promo stamped card that is guaranteed to be like rare or mythic rare. Mine was Bonnie Paul. So it's like Lady Paul Bunyan with a big ass ox, and she's chopping down trees and drawing me cards. She's very cool. But anyway, not to brag. Aside from that, you get six packs of Magic cards. And aside from basic lands, which the store will provide, you build your deck on the spot, and then you play against other players who have also done the same thing. And typically you'll get reward packs depending on your performance. I know some stores will give you just like one pack per win. Other stores are a little bit more generous, but it really shouldn't be about just winning. This is usually a more lighthearted, casual affair where you're learning the cards, you're rubbing elbows with people that might not normally come to a card store. Since this is something that all Magic players across most format or competitive boundaries can get excited about, because everybody wants their hands on the new cards. So you'll see people that only show up for pre-releases. You'll see people who go to the store multiple times a week for various events and tournaments, and anywhere in between. Like, I personally, this is my first pre-release in like a year or two, I want to say. And I show up to the game shop maybe once a month. So I'd like to go more, but that's a whole nother story. But basically, pre-releases, a big old casual event that still has some tournament structure. As for Outlaws of Thunder Junction, it is basically a set that's an excuse to get a bunch of iconic Magic the Gathering characters together and dump them in a faux Wild West setting, which is pretty cool. You can say that again. What kind of deck did you end up building during this? So I ended up making a green, blue, white, plotting deck. One of the mechanics of Thunder Junction is there are some cards that you can plot, which means you pay a certain cost, and then you put the card into exile, and then you can't play it that turn, but any subsequent turn at sorcery speed, you can cast the card for free, which can enable all sorts of weird, like, if you don't cast a spell from your hand this turn, you get this benefit. So I had a few synergy cards with that mechanic. I had Fibblethip, everybody's favorite little homunculus freak. I actually I despise Fibblethip, but in this deck he was pretty solid. I had a weird like scientist bear druid thing, Doc Arlok, Grizzled Genius, made my plotting cheaper. So I had some like minor synergies with plot where I could make those cards cheaper or give cards that didn't have plot. I had Key to the Vault, so I could like cast things for free if I managed to hit. But in terms of like raw synergy, I guess I had a few mount cards as well. But I was kind of all over the place. I would say minor like mount synergy, and then plot was the main draw of the deck. So yeah, I don't know. And a lot of times it was just like straight value. Like, oh, I have a large creature. Like literally there's a card called Giant Beaver. May have been the unsung hero of the deck, because a lot of times it just beat people to death. You can be fancy and go for synergy, but I don't know. It felt like the creature quality in this set was a little bit lower. And so if you could get something to stick and then put some equipment on it, which I did have a few equipments as well, you could just kind of beat people to death. I had a couple of cards called Lone Shark. It's literally a shark. Okay. And on top of it, like drawing you a card if you manage to do some plotting shenanigans usually. There's just some good old fundamentals that you can beat people to death with. So that was the deck. Just green, white, blue, occasional value, but I am going to just try to hold your head underwater until you stop breathing style play. Which can work in the sealed format. Obviously, very like powerful rares are going to carry some matches if they can stick. But I find that if you sometimes just try to go with consistency, that can pick you up some free wins. I briefly considered trying to go four colors. Maybe I should have. I even saw some five color decks out there. But it seemed like the common consensus at my table and across the event was like a lot of people struggling to find like really good playables and having to branch out into multiple, well, I say multiple colors. Conventional wisdom would say, hey, if you're at a pre-release, you're probably going to go at least two colors with your deck. I didn't think Outlaws of Thunder Junction was going to be a like triple color set. I thought you could get by with mostly just two colors, but there were a lot of 3, 4, and 5 color decks that I saw at my event. So if I could go back to the drawing board, I might splash another color, but I was really struggling. I had a lot of like green multicolor cards, but green on its own, I didn't have a ton. But looking back, my two best, like, or not two best, but two green cards that really stood out and were also incredibly cute. I had Giant Beaver, badass, very cool. And then Rambling Possum, which is very cute. And it's just a good old 3/3 for 3. Sometimes you just need to beat someone to death with a marsupial. Although I'm looking at the card right now, and it's Rambling Possum, but there's no O in front. And I don't know if any language expert people can tell me if that is correct. I thought it was supposed to have an O in front of it. And it's very clearly an American-style possum. It's not one of the cute ones that those Australians have. It's one of our... I mean, the American ones are cute too, but you know, like, there's objective cuteness, and then there's like refined acquired cuteness appreciation. And I think that the American possums have that, or it appeals to a more refined palate. Anyway, I don't know what the hell I'm saying, but those two green cards were really solid, but I mostly splashed green for Doc Arlok. Bonnie Paul, I mentioned earlier, she's a blue-green card that has some insane value, because fucking blue and green put together on a rare card are almost always just absolutely nuts in a limited environment or constructed. I still remember Uro, that freakish Titan that got banned in like every format. Not every format, but every format that matters. I also had a unicorn mount, a Seraphic Steed. Never once got to use its ability where it shits out an angel. Kind of pissed about that, but yeah, minor mount theme was pretty cool. I wish I had gotten to do it more. I'm upset that I can't play this on Arena until later, but I understand why they've limited it. But anyway, to cut my rambling short, had a pretty cool blue-green-white value deck, kind of, I guess you could say, plotting and mount synergies. Couldn't have said it better myself. What was the record at the pre-release? Did we scrub out? Did we go undefeated? How'd we do? All right, this is the question that I was dreading. I did not scrub out, which I think would have led to maybe a more interesting podcast episode, because it's always fun to listen to a Magic player whine and make excuses for why they did not win. But I actually went 2-2. I can give you a really quick breakdown of the rounds, because I don't know how interested the folks at home are in the like individual card breakdown, but round one, I faced off against a guy who I assume wins lottery tickets recreationally, because his deck was incredibly juiced. It had four of the Oblivion Ring style removal spells from this set, which for the folks at home, just imagine like just something that gets rid of almost anything on the board. He had two copies of an incredibly powerful rare. He had a mythic rare that fucking wines and dines you and then is a generous lover. It slices, it dices, it does it all. For those in the know, he had Annie Flash. I got blown out by Annie Flash. And then he had a fucking card that, exiled and brought back his stuff multiple times in a row. The card's called One More Round. So that guy just, he had it all. He had it all. He crushed me round one. Round two, I had an opponent that, we actually talked about other players going to time, and then he did not play super fast. Granted, our matches went back and forth quite a bit. We ended up going to time on game three, but then he ended up winning it. I believe his deck was red, blue, black. My first opponent, I think he went full on five color, because he just, you know, when you have unlimited luck, you're going to rip all the lands that you need. So I think he went like five color, maybe four color. Second round opponent, blue, black, red. Second round opponent, I think I jotted it down. He was red, green, black. I beat him, and I'll talk more about that guy later, but I think that was just straight up like we got into a slog, good old fashioned Magic, chucking haymakers at each other, and I could just make more hay than him. So I beat that guy. And then my final opponent, he was playing white, blue, red. And I think we also went to game three. There were a lot of good games of Magic. I can't remember if my round three opponent, if we went to game three, but hey, two of my rounds, we went to game three. And outside of my first opponent, I'd say a lot of the matches were really close. So overall, even though I went 2-2, I just broke even. And in my ideal world, every tournament has at least five rounds in it. I'm pretty happy with my 2-2 my 2-2 record, because again, like I said earlier, I don't consider this like a huge competitive thing where like you have to win everything. So if I was 1-3 though, I would be distraught. If I was 0-4, I would not be recording this. I would have taken this whole project and thrown it in the garbage and told everyone that we're taking another week off of No Player Connected. So 2-2, it keeps the podcast running. That is just tragic slash awesome and expected. What was the vibe at the pre-release? Because back when we used to be in the Green Bay scene and up in Northeast Wisconsin, it was pretty chill, pretty positive, not as competitive. You see a lot of people who don't attend tournaments very often. They come out of the woodwork to see the new cards, get their hands on them. What was the vibe? Yeah, the vibe was pretty good. You mentioned our time back in Green Bay. One of the things that stood out to me back when we were in Green Bay and we'd go to big pre-release events was people dressing up for them. When Theros came out, and for those of you not in the know, that was a Greek-themed set that had like gods and like monsters that you'd see from Greek myth and Greek heroes and shit. It was a toga party. People dressed up and were in togas. At this event, much smaller, since I'm in a smaller city now, but there were some people who dressed up in Western attire, like cowboy hats, vests, stuff like that. I tried to ask Emma to run me a cowboy hat, since I do have one, but since it was nighttime, very late, I did not, in fact, get that delivery. No shade to Emma. That was very reasonable of her. And I should just always keep my cowboy hat on me for just such an occasion. But really, I should have thought it through more. But the vibes were great. Very chill people, very fun people to hang out with. Really, outside of round one, which I got absolutely fucking smoked. So part of the vibe not being quite as good was probably me sulking because it felt like the hand of God came down to throttle me. The vibes were good. The vibes were good. I will say that we had kind of a quiet judge. I am used to judges bellowing out, "Magic players, that is time in the round," or things like that. And our judge was kind of quiet. Time in the round was not usually called on time. Which, again, it's a pre-release. Who cares? It's not that big of a deal. But still. So very chill, almost too chill, I would say. My old cutthroat Friday Night Magic nature was bleeding through. And I was like, during my second round, I was like, oh shit, like we're at turns right now. And so, like, I called time before the judge called time, which it didn't matter. We didn't end up actually getting to turn 6 or turn 5 or whatever you'd call it. But yeah, very chill vibes. But I did have some weird stuff going on, which maybe we'll talk about later. I'm trying to remember what me from the past put down as questions, but I'm pretty sure I can segue this. I'll just talk about it now. To start things off, I noticed two of my former students were at this pre-release, which terrified me. I can't remember if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I am a teacher, and it's very weird to see people that you used to like teach when they were middle schoolers, and now they're almost grown adults. I don't think they recognize me, though, because I look pretty different from when I used to teach. So it was weird. It was weird seeing them there, but you know, I didn't have to play against them, so it wasn't that big of a deal. They didn't recognize me. I didn't want to bug them and be like, "Hey, it's me, your old teacher. I'm playing Magic the Gathering at 1 a.m. I'm a freak. But I saw them. Then I recognized a guy that I hadn't seen in a few years from my hometown area, and I had to ask him what the hell was going on, what was he doing there. So just seeing a lot of people that I recognized was a little unusual, but Magic the Gathering is a social game. It brings people together. And honestly, it was cool running into my old buddy, and it was cool seeing my former students playing something that I considered, like, you know, intellectually stimulating. Again, it's social. So I felt a tinge of pride there. I ran into a guy who had an Ashiok playmat. And for those of you that don't know, Ashiok is a planeswalker in Magic the Gathering. They're an interesting, like, villainous character. And in this set, it turns out that Ashiok was just, or at least this Ashiok, I don't follow the story super closely, but Ashiok, as they were appearing, like, recently, was actually Jace using illusions to mimic Ashiok, which fucking sucks, because Jace is supposed to be dead, but he's not dead. He is, in fact, totally fine, still a planeswalker, and we don't get Ashiok in this set. So, I bonded with another player, the dude with the Ashiok playmat, because I was like, hey, how pissed were you to find out that we didn't get Ashiok and it was Jace? And then he proceeded to talk about how excited he was because so many other main character planeswalkers had died, and he thought we were finally done with Jace, and it turns out Jace is fine. Then I had to break the news to him that not only is Jace fine, but him and Vraska, his hot Gorgon GF, they have their own little baby Yoda adopted kid now. And at first he didn't know what I was talking about when I said there's a baby Yoda now. I think maybe he thought there was literally a baby Yoda card, because Wizards of the Coast has been doing so many crossover promotions. But no, it's just it's a little cute freak. His name's Loot. And yeah, once I specified to him that that's what that was, yeah, he hates that thing too. So it was really cool bonding with that guy. The next opponent that I had, my round four opponent, was really chill, like super funny guy. Got a lot of laughs out of him. We had a running joke throughout our games where I had a card called Prairie Dog, just a super cute, adorable card, but also pretty strong. And my opponent would just brutally kill it every single match before it could do anything. I think he, like, machine gunned it down two of the games, and then one game he forced it to fight another creature and just viciously mauled it. So that guy ruled. He took my accusations of being a fucked up individual in stride. And we just had a blast, me and that guy. So overall, the vibes were great. It was an absolute blast. We did have an awkward moment where we were talking about the upcoming set, because we were talking about the prairie dogs and other beautiful wildlife creatures. And an upcoming set is like everyone's got a fursona, or it's kind of like the Redwall book, I think. That's the one with like all the animals that talk and shit. And one of the guys that was at the event came up and was like, oh yeah, I'm really excited about that. I'm especially excited about Jace. And like after he left, because he was like, oh, I think Jace is going to be like a fox or something. How cool is that? Then like the guy walks away, and then me and round four opponent guy, like I'm laughing, and I tell him like, hey, I just bonded with somebody else over how much we fucking hate Jace. And you know, we both laughed quite a bit about that. I don't know what the larger community's opinion on Jace is. I would like it if he were killed with hammers in the next set, or one of the, maybe not the next set because he'll be like a cute little animal, but maybe the next set. I hope maybe it's all just a ruse and maybe Vraska will turn him to stone, or maybe his little baby Yoda creature becomes too powerful and blows him up with its mind. But I would like to get rid of Jace. The vibes would be way better if Jace were gone for good. I forget what was being asked of me here. I'll have what she's having. Anyway, How does the set feel? You know, sometimes you have a limited environment that has a distinct vibe to it. My favorite, like, comparison and my favorite set to play limited in lately was Murders at Karloff Manor, because it really made you feel like Spider-Man. No, it made you feel like you were a detective, or you were trying to piece together some clues, like, what the hell is your opponent doing? Am I about to get blown out? Am I about to blow out my opponent? Who's blowing who? Did the theme of Thunder Junction translate to the mechanics and the limited environment? All right, I will preface this by saying that, again, only played 4 rounds. Luckily, 2 of those went to game 3. So, I don't know, some fucking math wizard can do the math. But let's see, I played like 10 games of Magic that night. And I did not creep over too many people's shoulders to watch their games. But I still feel like the theme came through in the mechanics. I would say that of the... let's see, what are the main ones? You've got plotting, you've got outlaws, which is like a broad classification for different creature types, and outlaws tend to get some sort of benefit. You know, it's almost like how you have some elf cards that support elves. The outlaw cards support, oh shit, it's like warlocks, rogues, some other nefarious creature types that I'm forgetting to remember. But basically, instead of just supporting one creature type, it supports like 4 of them, 4 or 5, which is pretty neat, because it's almost like tribal, but not quite. You have mounts, which are almost like vehicles in that you have other creatures, like, quote unquote, like ride them. It's almost like crewing a vehicle card, where you tap the card in order to saddle the mount. And then you have the whole committing crimes thing, which is just, hey, if you're interacting with your opponent, apparently that's committing a crime. I think a commander player may have had a hand in designing that, because normally when I think of interaction, I think that's a good thing. But yeah, this set classifies it as a crime. So you have outlaws, crimes, mounts, and plotting. I would say the outlaw stuff and the plotting both came through the most mechanically. The crime stuff, I think maybe once or twice a crime being committed during one of my games mattered, like, at all. The mounting, this sounds very weird to say. I don't like talking about mounting. But anyway, saddling the mounts felt more painful or more like a waste of resources for me than it would be with vehicles. And maybe that's just because my small creature count wasn't that high. But at least with a vehicle, it goes from not being a creature to being a creature, which is a pretty big change. And you can justify that with a more aggressive stat line. With saddling. God, I'm just... Anyway, with saddling mounts, it's already a creature. And the benefits that I got from my saddle creatures, my mount creatures, I already told you I wasn't able to trigger Seraphic Steed, which would have been pretty broken because that thing shits out 3/3 angels. So that's a pretty solid mount card, and maybe my opinion would change if I'd been able to activate it or trigger it more often. But the other ones, the Rambling Possum, the Giant Beaver, more often than not, I did not saddle them because they were already decent creatures already, and I only had corner cases where the saddling helped me, because it's a big ask to take a medium-sized creature and take it out of combat for 2 turns, because you're using it to saddle another creature on your turn, and then it's tapped during their turn. So I don't know if that's a common complaint when it comes to saddling and mount creatures, but it just felt not as good, if that makes any sense. So it was still a mechanic that I was at least thinking about, unlike committing crimes, because I would never commit a crime. But the saddling stuff, I was always like, oh, do I do it? Do I not do it? And it usually didn't seem to do anything if I saddled. So plotting felt very cool, felt very dramatic, felt very like it fit the theme, because you're putting your cards on the table. You're saying, hey, here's what's coming up. I can't do it this turn, but it's going to happen. So it feels very like direct. Like you are, in fact, two cowboys reaching for your guns. You can both see the threat that's coming up. How are you going to answer it? How are you going to respond to this? And so I think plot knocked it out of the park. I think that's good. And I'm not just saying that because my deck had a lot of plot cards. Even before I got my hands on these cards and I played with them, I thought, hey, this seems like a flavor win. This seems like, hey, we're both building up to a crescendo where both sides are going to start slinging spells and making a lot of crazy plays. But it also opens up an interesting design space. The idea of having certain cards that pay off if you don't cast something from your hand, I think is really cool. Spells that benefit from casting multiple spells a turn obviously benefit from delaying a spell so that it can be free on a subsequent turn. So plotting ruled. And then the outlaw stuff, I didn't see a ton of outlaw synergies in my games, but the sample size is pretty small. I'm interested to see if they can, I mean, again, I got to play more, so I don't know how it feels, but if they do succeed with this set, if it turns out that the outlaw like subcategory of creatures and the support that they received works, if they will do this in the future, I just don't know, because for outlaws it makes sense that because we're in Thunder Junction, we're playing cowboys, we're playing bounty hunters and shit like that. But for other sets, can they do something similar? Like, will we get an explorer subgroup where it's like scouts, druids, warriors? I don't know. I don't know what the hell you would put in there. But it could be an interesting way to give support to creature types that wouldn't normally get it. We've gotten detectives now, which there's a little bit of detective tribal support in Murders at Karlov Manor, but we have like a bunch of cards that are like advisor, noble. I could see, I don't know what kind of hellish set this would be, but in a similar vein to the outlaw support that we got here, are we going to get bureaucrat support? Maybe that's for an unset, but it could be like nobles, advisors, and then I don't know, you could put detectives in there for the hell of it. But I don't know, I think it opens up some interesting design space, but specifically for Outlaws of Thunder Junction, I definitely need to play with the cards more. And I'm not just saying that because I still have a child brain that wants to play with cardboard. All right, well, that about does it. I appreciate you stopping in, finding time in your busy day to do this episode with me. But yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me. I know your schedule's pretty busy. Before we wrap things up, I do want to shout out friend of the podcast, Mullet Wesker. He's got his own podcast going now called Frame Loss. It's pretty cool. They just dropped a 2-hour episode on Silent Hill. It's kind of just the perspective of some fans of a franchise that's long running, looking at the changes that have taken place over time. I don't know anything about Silent Hill, and I still listen to the entire thing. It was a lot of fun. So yeah, check that out. Give it a listen. And of course, I encourage you to, you know, check out all the creative endeavors of everybody else that's been on this podcast. But he like specifically shouted us out, so I am morally obligated to return the favor, and I'm really interested to see where that project goes in the future. And I'd also like to shout out everybody who has listened to this episode, because it is a little strange, dare I say self-indulgent. I don't know if the host would agree with me, but maybe. But this has been fun. This has been a fun episode to record. And I suppose now is the moment where the music's probably already